Good morning. Today. So if you're a Christian of almost any kind, this time of year, it's hard not to get caught up in the beautiful story of the birth of Jesus. The whole thing's just sort of so magically delicious. The story of a king, but born in a manger, a mother who's pure and innocent and giving a virginal birth to the child of God, angels singing in all their majesty, the heavens realigned so that a bright star might shine down upon his birth, lowly shepherds to all the way to respected magi journeying to pay homage to him, this newborn king. It's just so inspiring and beautiful, unbelievable. You see, that's the thing. Really, truly is unbelievable. Here's the thing about unbelievable and stories. If you're trying to give a factual accounting of truth, of the truth of what happened, unbelievable is a problem. Now, if you're trying to communicate some larger truth than the truth of what happened, then it can approach upon poetry. And that's beautiful in a very, very different way. Or as Bishop John Shelby Spong put it in an article from Christmas of 2004, unfortunately, the religious minds of our generation believe that these traditions can be protected from erosion only if they are literalized. Nothing could be further from the truth, he says. The deepest meaning of this season can never really be understood until the literal claims have been laid aside. Jesus' birth was not something that occurred on a silent and holy night in a little town of Bethlehem. No star, he says, announced his birth, and no angel sang of peace on earth. These mystical details rather embody a beautiful and eternal human dream that we enter into symbolically year after year. Now, let's start with the odds of whether or not the Christmas story that we know was ever meant to be a factual accounting of the events of Jesus' birth. Now, many people don't realize that the New Testament isn't actually assembled in chronological order of the writing of it. See, the reality is that the writings attributed to Paul, those predate all of the Gospels by several decades. So, our earliest look at what the followers of Jesus thought about his miraculous birth comes from Paul's letters. And now, out of all of his letters, Paul found the birth of Jesus important enough to mention it precisely twice. Galatians 4:4. But when the time had fully come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under law. Now, I got to say, why bother saying born under law? Of a woman. I'm not sure there was another. It's there, though. Then Romans 1:3, Jesus Christ our Lord, which was made of the seed of David according to the flesh. So, Paul seems to think that Jesus' birth was normal and not particularly miraculous. After all, if you're trying to convince folks that this guy is worth following, like Paul was, the whole remarkable birth story seems like it would be more than worth telling them about. But he didn't. Now, in terms of the Gospels, the first one that was written was the Gospel of Mark. So, what did Mark have to say about this amazing story that absolutely has to be told? Nothing. Not one word. And let's face it, it's not exactly the kind of story that you just sort of forget to include. So, it would seem that during Jesus' life, and for some times after it, up to about 700 CE, concepts of a miraculous birth were not part of the movement he birthed. Now, that brings me to Matthew and Luke, who actually do describe Jesus' birth. Matthew and Luke were written at roughly the same time, but somehow, they have different recordings of the story. At times, significantly different. So different that they are somewhat difficult to reconcile. See, it's perfectly reasonable to think that stories about the same thing might disagree when they've only existed a brief amount of time in the communities that tell them. But over time, similar stories tend to sort of conflate into a larger overarching story, much like the modern Christmas pageants we have done with the two differing birth stories. But when it comes to Matthew and Luke, that never really happened. It really is likely that these were each relatively young stories when they were finally recorded. Now, a curious question then would be, if the miraculous birth narrative didn't exist, at least not in any well-known way at that time, and let's face it, if they were being told, that's a story that would have been well-known. If the miraculous birth narratives didn't exist much before the writings of Matthew and Luke, what was the impetus for the creation of them? Well, you see, the Jesus movement had a bit of a growth spurt in the time just before Matthew and Luke were written. And they found themselves in the midst of many, many pagan religions, some of which included popular, miraculous birth stories of their heroes and gods. Zoroaster, Krishna, Buddha, the list goes on and on. I suspect that the Christian birth stories were embellished in order to compete with the many larger religions of the time. Now, the result are two conflicting stories that we have in the Bible, as well as several non-canonical stories that were shared in the early church. And the details of these stories are not only frequently unbelievably miraculous, but they also seem to contradict history from that time. From the census that they traveled to partake in to King Herod's killing off of every male baby in the area, there's just no indication whatsoever from any reliable historians of the time that those events ever happened. That's how we end up with one story that has the family of Jesus living in Bethlehem and fleeing to Egypt immediately after his birth, and another story that has the family living in Nazareth, journeying to Bethlehem for a census and never fleeing to Egypt at all. It's why magi are in Matthew and not in Luke. It is why shepherds are in Luke and not in Matthew. Add it all together, and it's difficult to come to any logical conclusion other than it's made up. Was Jesus born? Yes, I believe so. Who were his parents? Mary and Joseph, because that's how human biology works, folks. Where was he born? Well, probably in Nazareth at his parents' home. So should we throw the story of the first Christmas out then? Well, to borrow a turn of phrase from Paul, by no means. I happen to think that while not all stories tell the truth, all stories tell a truth. In other words, they don't have to use facts to convey something that reveals a larger truth. Personally, I find great value in the symbolism of the Christmas story. This is a story that was told under the shadow of a dominant culture, a culture that revered power and might. Yet, here is a child that has a connection to God like no one before him. He comes to set people free. A prince, but a prince of peace. He does not come in high and mighty like the kings of old. He's born under difficult circumstances. He was born to an olive-skinned, Middle Eastern, unwed, pregnant mother who was seen as little more than property. Born into a world that would surely see him as a illegitimate child who was wrapped in what rags they can find and placed in a smelly, flea-infested feeding trough in the midst of a dark and musky-smelling animal stall. This is power from the bottom up. This is the power of love, not the power of might. This is what the beginnings of the liberation for the oppressed looks like. It doesn't come from those who already hold power. It comes from common, everyday people. This is a promise that love wins. It's a foretaste and a foreshadowing of who the teachings of this child is for, and it causes the mighty to shake in their boots. Bishop Spong put all of this quite beautifully in the article that I mentioned earlier. He says, "Why do we then keep these stories and repeat them every year if they're not factually true? That is usually the question of an adult who's had his or her fairy tale religion shaken. And the answer is simple. Truth is so much bigger than literalism. Some human experiences are so large, so real, so life-changing and so defining that the words used to describe those moments must break open the imagination if they are to capture that kind of truth. That's what myth does. That is what the biblical stories of Jesus' birth are all about. There was something present in this Jesus, they said, that opened human lives to the new dimensions of reality. Human beings could never have produced what we have experienced in Jesus. In Him, they exclaimed, we believe that we have met eternity breaking into time. Transcendence entering into the mundane. The divine in the life of the human. If that is our experience with an adult Jesus, then His birth must have been marked by heavenly signs that drew people to Him. That's what these stories are saying. Our task is not to master the details or to pretend that the myths are history. It is rather to enter into the experience that causes the myths surrounding His birth to be born, to be transformed by that life, and to become a new creation through that experience. And if that occurs, these early Christians were saying, we too will see the star of Bethlehem, hear angels sing, and like the wise men and shepherds of old, begin our journey toward the mystery and the wonder of God. And that is the meaning of Christmas. Yes, I love the Christmas story. No, I do not believe it's true. But yes, I do believe it's truth. Merry Christmas. We'd like to offer you the opportunity to respond to today's message. I just point out to please keep your responses very concise and as short as possible so that we can let as many people participate as possible. Are there those who have thoughts they'd like to share?
Good morning, I'm David, and I wanted to address last week's miraculous snowfall. And I just want to say, Mark, you know, if you really aren't ready for your sermon or if you need a day off, you could just let us know and we'd be happy to.
I'll keep that in mind.
You don't need the Sam 12 inches of snow.
This is being recorded, so I can hold you to that now.
No, I'm saying you don't need to do that. You just ask us, right?
That's what I mean.
I think we could get a consensus. We don't need 12 inches of snow in order to. Okay. The other thing that seems to be behind what you're saying, and I like your presentation and what you're saying, is just kind of that the people of that time were not interested in what we consider to be facts. I mean, that was not their
not always
mindset.
When they were trying to describe something larger than life, they had no problem with expanding the story in a way that communicated it was larger than life. And realizing it's not true, but it expresses the value that we see in it.
So we're obsessed with something that didn't matter to them at all.
Right. Are there others?
Morning. My name is Lena. I just want to thank you. I have never believed the story, but you've just given me some meaning for the story and the season. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. Are there others? If not, we do have another.
I'm Ralph, and I particularly appreciated your comparing a myth to poetry.
Thank you. Are there any others? Vance.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Mark. I'm Vance. I have a question and then something else. How is what David was talking about and what Ralph was talking about and what you were talking about particularly different than what Donald Trump is doing these days, presenting his own myth? The other thing is it really saddens me to think about the fact that Christianity, however it started and however it grew, gave rise to the Spanish Inquisition and the Spanish conquest of South America.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, folks do that with all sorts of religions, decide to use it as a weapon against people who aren't like them. Are there others? We got another one.
Thank you, Mark, for all of that. And the thing about the Spanish Inquisition, the use of Christianity has always disturbed me. And recently I realized many of us also draw on Buddhism and find the contemplative practices of Buddhism extremely helpful, and it's very peaceful. Myanmar is a Buddhist country.
Yeah.
So no religion is true to the best principles of that religion. It's my, my understanding as I've become older.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing that. We've got another in the back.
Hi, excuse me, I'm Zora. Something else you said, as well as your sermon. I grew up Catholic, and I went to a Catholic school and had religious classes every single day. We studied not only Christianity, we studied all the religions because it was an ecumenical approach. But later on in my life, about my 30s or so, I started experiencing a great deal of fury with, it turned out really was with Christianity, but I projected it onto Jesus, and really angry with Jesus. And this whole, all the destruction and the violence and the self-righteousness and the awful results of this religion being founded. And I had a couple of experiences actually with Jesus, the spirit, the soul, whatever, that really changed. They were, in a way, personal spiritual encounters. And I realized it wasn't Jesus at all. It was the religion that was founded in his name that had caused all this destruction and these stupid beliefs of humanity and fears. And so I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.